We saw some pretty amazing things in this passage, but I want us to go to Genesis to kind of set our palette for Hebrews 11. Appreciate you reading that, Ronnie. Genesis 22. Genesis 22. Here's our list of topics. Let's see if we get to any of them tonight. Genesis 22. I want you to see a few things in the passage that'll help you understand what Hebrews 11, 17 to 19 was talking about. Then we'll go back to Hebrews. I want you to notice these good things. Hebrews is where we'll be. Genesis 22 is where we are. It came to pass after these things that God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham, and he said, here I am. He said, take now your son. Look what he calls him here. Your only son. Now he says that three times in the passage, once here, once in 12. Look at the verse 12. He said, do not lay your hand on the lad. Or do anything to him, for now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son. That's right. So we have that, and then I don't want to lose my place. It'll be somewhere else in here. Thank you. 16, there it is. And he said, by myself I have sworn, says the Lord, because you have done this thing and have not withheld your son, your only son. All right, so that is a big deal in this passage. Why is it a big deal? Yeah, that's ultimately. What else? So same thing, foreshadowing. What else? He already has a son. His name is Ishmael. You suppose Moses knows about that when he's writing this? Bet you he does. Wonder what's going on here. So we do know that there's no funny stuff going on here with the Hebrew and the English. Only is translated one way in the entire Old Testament, all 15 or so times as only, at least in the New King James. There's a way to play with it a little bit in the New Testament, so it kind of softens the blow, but the problem is that Old Testament came first. He says, take your son, verse 2, your only son, Isaac, you, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering. See that word offer? You know what that means in the Hebrew? Offer. It means to offer him there. Kill him as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I tell you. So as far as Abraham is concerned, by the time we get to verse number 3, his son is, by the end of the story, going to be ashes on rocks. He's going to be a burnt offering. Abraham rose early in the morning and saddled his donkey and took two of his young men with him and Isaac his son, and he split the wood for the burnt offering and rose and went to the place of which God had told him. On the third day, Abraham lifted his eyes and saw the place afar off. Abraham said to his young men, stay here with the donkey, the lad, and I will go yonder and worship. We'll be back. That's interesting. Because he was told to offer his son in verse number 2 as a burnt offering, and Abraham's getting up to obey, somehow Abraham thinks they're coming on back down the hill. Now act like you haven't heard this before. Somehow, this Abraham who was told in Genesis 12, so many kids, you ain't gonna be able to count them all. Genesis 15, so many kids. Abraham said, yeah, okay, I believe. Counted righteous. 50 years later, at least 50 years later, probably, he is now being told to kill his son. This would start by cutting his neck and letting the blood drain out and then burning him up on the altar. And Abraham, knowing that that's probably what's going to happen, says, just hang on, we'll be back. I don't know how long it takes to burn a body, but there are some good guesses here that Isaac is no small person, because in verse number 8, he carries the wood for the burnt offering. I don't know how long it takes for an offering to be completely burnt up, but it takes a lot of fire, which means you need a lot of wood. Isaac is no toddler toting up a little red wagon to the top of Moriah. He is carrying a load of wood to burn his own body on. And Abraham says, we'll be back. So Abraham took the wood, the burnt offering, laid it on Isaac, his son, took the fire in his hand and a knife, and the two of them went together. Isaac spoke to Abraham, his father, and said, "My father." He said, "I'm here, son." He said, "Look, we've got the fire and the wood, but where's the lamb for a burnt offering?" Abraham said, "Oh, my son, God will provide." What kind of pain is this Abraham feeling right now? God will provide for himself the lamb. So the two of them for a burnt offering. So the two of them went together. And that is a beautiful foreshadow of the Lord Jesus Christ being accompanied by his Father to the cross. And this argues against the idea that God turned his back on his son. We already have Isaiah 53 where it says that he will see the travail of his soul and shall be satisfied. God beholds all of it and is satisfied. God never turned his back on a single sacrifice in the Old Testament. He certainly wasn't going to turn his back on his own son. So whatever it means, "My God, why have you forsaken me?" It did not mean God, the omnipresent God of the universe, turned his ever-present face. Here they go together. They come to the place of which God had told him, and Abraham built an altar there and placed wood in order. And I'll bet he did it slow. He bound Isaac, his son, and I'll bet he did it real slow. "Any moment, Lord, where's that lamb?" Laid him on the altar on the wood, and Abraham stretched out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. Now, we said this morning his son might be in his 30s. Now, how could Isaac be anything here but a wonderful picture of a Christ who is 33, oddly enough, who lays himself down on a cross and is bound to it with nails? So it's not just that Abraham is the perfect picture of the Father, the best that we have in the Old Testament. Isaac is the perfect picture of the Son. In verse 10, verse 11, the angel, I mean, I don't know if you can see it or not, Abraham is reaching maybe for the hair of the head of his son and reaching his knife. And verse 11, the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, "Abraham, Abraham." He said, "Here I am. Here I am. He said, "Don't lay your hand on the lad. Don't do anything to him. For I know that you fear God." You might be thinking, well, lad, that means he's young. No, the same word is used for Benjamin when he is well into his 20s later in the book. I mean, when you're 137 years old, everyone's a lad. I'm a lad. Ronnie's a lad. "Don't lay your hand on the lad or do anything to him, for now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me." Abraham lifted his eyes, looked, and behold, there was a ram caught in the thicket by its horns. And so here, the picture changes from Isaac being a picture of Christ to the ram being a picture of Christ, who is the sacrifice substitute for all of us. Abraham went and took the ram and offered it up. So talk to me. What does the word offer mean? It also means to kill. It means to kill. We see that because he was told to do it in verse number 2. And we see that he actually did offer the ram as a burnt offering in verse 13. The word offer is very specific, and it means that he was told to kill his son, didn't do it, instead offered the ram. Verse 14, Abraham called the name of the place, "The Lord will provide, as it is said to this day, in the mount of the Lord it shall be provided." And I talked 3 years ago, January 2020, about how Jesus died on this very place, in this mountain of the Lord where God provided a lamb, Mount Moriah. So we see a few things here. I want you to notice, first of all, he's called the only son. He's told to offer him. And now I'd like us, please, to go to the book of Hebrews again for some great stuff. Hebrews chapter number 11. Hebrews is not simply just the hall of faith. I'm okay with that, but it is much more. And if you want to know what it's basically, if you want to narrow it down, faith in what? The answer, faith in promises not yet received. Let's take a little sample here. Look at verse number 20. Faith, by faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things to come. So Isaac did bless Jacob when he was, it says, old and ready to die. Verse 21, by faith, Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of his sons. Verse 22, by faith, Joseph, when he was dying. Three straight men and three straight verses are told to have been doing things by faith on their deathbed. They have not yet received it. They're driving towards home. That builder and maker is God. That city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God, that we read about with Ronnie. A heavenly country, verse 16. A country, verse 15, that if you were thinking about anything else, you might turn back. That is what we're looking for. And as we approach the home place, we see the lights, but the dawn of our day, or we should say the light of our day, sets, and we don't get there. And so we just know that the person who's in the car with us is going to get to have the promises. The next day, there will be more opportunities, and the one in the back seat of the station wagon is going to probably get there before the end of his day. And he moves up to the driver's seat, and he has kids, and they're in the back seat, and they have promises from God, and they are getting closer to home, and they see the lights, but the day, the sun sets on their day, and before you know it, it's the grandson's turn to drive towards home. Promises not yet received, but we know that they're coming. That is the view of this. So much to the point where in chapter 12 and verse number 2, he says, look to Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for, here it is, the joy that was set before him endured the cross. And I'm telling you, he did not get it until he died. Do you see the pattern here? These people died before they got their promises. But they got their promises in dying. That's good stuff. So as we look at verses 17 through 19 specifically, by faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up his... Wait a minute. No, he didn't. Do you see it, verse 17? Offered up his son. Do you know why it said that he did? You can even see in verse number 17, he who had received the promises offered up his only begotten son. And we're not going to play with the Greek behind that. We could. Many have. But we already know from Genesis 22, he was told to take his only son. And then you can see verse 19, he was concluding that God was able to raise him up, even from the dead. So Abraham is like, hang on, wait a minute, there are some promises that I need a living son to get. So that's why he tells him, you all hang out down here, we'll be back down. Imagine the faith that it took for Abraham to believe so much in the promises of God that if I cut my son's throat and burn him up on these rocks, somehow... Before this is over, those ashes are going to reconstitute and we're going to walk back down the hill. Now that, of course, is the reason why we ought not fret when people do things like cremate. Because that is a cremation story. I think Christians ought to bury. You know I do. But that's why I'm okay. A resurrection will work either way. You see in verse 19, concluding that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, from which he also received him in a figurative sense. That word figurative sense is where we get our word parable from. He got him back from the dead. But no, he didn't. There are three things in these three verses that didn't happen, that the writer says happened. One, he offered Isaac up. No, he didn't. Two, he offered up his only son. No, he didn't. Three, he got him back from the dead. No, he didn't. And what you have to decide is the Hebrews writer trying to mislead the reader? No, he's not. He knows that you have the book of Genesis as well as his letter in your lap. And that is why he helps us with the term figurative sense at the end. In other words, it was like he got his boy back from the dead. You remember the parable of the prodigal son, don't you? My son, which was dead, is alive. It's like I got him back from the dead. Jacob said the same thing about his boy Joseph. He said it's like he's back from the dead. Here, the Hebrews writer says, he was so full of faith, it was as if Isaac was as good as dead and back alive down the hill with him. That is phenomenal. But I think it's topped by the fact that in verse 17, 18, and 19, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, who he had received the promises, offered up his only begotten son. I think that this is fantastic. And the reason I think this is fantastic is because we're going to talk about that third bullet there, overlooking our faults. We already know that Abraham and Sarah, we're told in the book of Galatians, took a lesser form of grace, and it's allegorized, Paul says in Galatians 4, as Hagar being a picture of the law, and Ishmael being offspring of the law. Faith in the law, not faith in the work of Christ. So if you ask Paul in Galatians, there is actually no faith work in Ishmael being produced. Ishmael is the opposite of faith. What we didn't mention this morning is in Genesis 12, a 75-year-old man is told he's going to have children. He's going to be the father of a great nation. Then we talked about when he was 86 years old and he was told, you're going to have as many children as the sand of the sea and as the stars of the sky. But we didn't really talk about his 87th year because Sarah believed with Abraham that God's got to do something and we're going to be a great nation. But instead of trusting what God said that he would do through means that would honor him, and yes, they understood what happened in the garden and God's design, they decided to concoct something that would sort of help God be true to his promises. I find this fascinating because it's not mentioned in the book of Hebrews. It's as if God only recognizes what we do in faith and totally forgets what we don't do in faith. It's almost as if he looks at your life and sees what you are ashamed of and knows it wasn't done in faith and so never brings it up. There's plenty of people bringing it up to you. God's not going to be one of them. I mean, we probably should remind ourselves that it was easy for anyone to reference the book of Genesis. And the book of Hebrews here is definitely saying, look, I'm telling you, it's as if he got him back from the dead. It's as if he offered him by faith and killed him. It's also as if Ishmael never happened. Why? Because he was not one of the faith works of Abraham. Lesson for us. Sometimes the Lord allows even somehow the economy of heaven to forget those things that we do in quaking fear if they're not done in faith. The sobriety here is that when we get to the judgment seat of Jesus Christ, there is a grand probability that nothing we did outside of faith will be rewarded. We can't have it both ways, can we? Lord, forget what I did in doubt and out of a lack of faith, but please remember it when it's time to benefit me for all the good I've done. We can't have it both ways, can we? So here is a strange lesson, and we find this taught in Romans 14. Whatever is not of faith is sin. Second Corinthians 5:10. We will all stand before the judgment seat of Christ, that we may give an account of things done in this body according to what we have done, whether good or bad. And if what we have done that's not in faith is sin, I am really concerned about that day where I stand before the Lord. So, what is faith? We look back in Hebrews 11 and we find in verse number 1, it is the substance of things hoped for and evidence of things not seen. For by it, elders obtained good testimony. By faith, we understand that the worlds were framed by the word of God, so that the things which were seen, which are seen, were not made by things which are visible. I can see that I'm going to have to handle Abel, Enoch, and Noah some other time, and we'll get to them. What are your questions so far? Sarah. Oh, that is a great question, and I think the answer is in our text. With what kind of nagging questions did Abraham offer his son? So I think, based on that, I think we can assume. I mean, let's not even assume. Look at verse number 7. Let's talk about Noah for just a moment. By faith, Noah, being divinely warned of things not yet seen. There it is again, not yet seen. Moved with godly fear, prepared an ark for the saving of his household by which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness which is according to faith. How much faith pleased God in Noah's situation? Enough to do what? Enough to do what? I'm just not clear enough to me yet. I'm trying. Enough to do what? Enough to do, yeah, but what did obey mean for Noah? Enough to build an ark. He's told to do something. Might he have doubts? Maybe, but he had enough faith to obey. Abraham told to offer his son. Did he have no doubt, some trepidation? I believe so. In a mix between stacking the wood for his son to be burned and promising his son that God would provide a lamb, I think that there is a good mixture there of assurance and I sure hope. Enough faith to do it without the guarantee. And so, Sarah, I would say that you had enough faith. If you want to call it 51%, whatever tips you into the action is faith enough to be rewarded. Andy? Okay. Yes. Good. Well said. She was even ashamed of her laughing. Why are you laughing? I ain't laughing. Oh, you're laughing. She even said, am I going to have pleasure? And you can all read the Hebrew on that one. At this age, well done. Any other questions? Jake.
So like everything that you do in faith is counted to your righteousness, even if you question it the entire way. Because like, why, I don't understand why I'm doing this, I don't get it, but I'm still going to do it.
All right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Okay. Let's take a look at Mark chapter 10. Mark chapter number 10, and then we'll close with this. One of my favorite verses in the whole Bible. I need it. Hopefully by the time we get there, I'll remember exactly where it is. I'm close. Ah, thank God. Look at verse 32. Oh, this is just great. Oh, I wish I had 20 minutes to just shout and cry. Look at this. Now they were on the road going up to Jerusalem, and Jesus was going before them, and they were amazed. Oh, this is so good. And as they followed, they were afraid. You don't see the miracle? As they followed, they were afraid. But they followed. Let's all stand together.